Welcome to It's About Florida, a weekly discussion program tackling the key issues and topics of interest to our state. I'm Tramell Gomes. On our program tonight, we're focusing on Florida's insurance market, particularly auto and property insurance. As Florida mops up the remains of Tropical Storm Debbie, the state's chief insurance officer says the state can take an even bigger wallop should more storms come. Later in the program, we'll talk with Florida Insurance Commissioner Kevin McCarty. But first, let's take a step back. We're coming up on the 20-year anniversary of Hurricane Andrew this August. It was one of just three Category 5 storms to strike the U.S., leaving 15 people dead and more than 150,000 people homeless. Andrew caused several private insurance companies to fail or pull out of Florida. Lawmakers created the state-run Citizens Property Insurance Company to cover the riskiest policyholders with nowhere left to turn. But as Jessica Palumbo reports, a series of storms in 2004 and 2005 left lawmakers debating whether the nonprofit Citizens should raise rates and drop customers.
In 2004 and 2005, one hurricane after another hit Florida. At the time, Citizens Insurance had been building cash reserves for years.
Folks start looking at their reserves saying, gee, that's an awful lot of money sitting there. Maybe we could use that for something else. Fortunately, that didn't happen.
That's Professor Patrick Maroney. He runs the Florida Catastrophic Storm Risk Management Center at the Florida State University College of Business. The center studies the science of risk and makes recommendations to the legislature about insurance policy. Maroney says the 2004-2005 storm season changed Citizens from being a last resort safety net to being many people's first and only choice. The number of policyholders ballooned.
The reaction to that was increased cost for reinsurance, which resulted in increased premiums. Then there was a legislative pushback on that. And Citizens at that point, like that's when they became the competitive market that they continue to be.
Lawmakers placed a cap on Citizens' rate increases in 2007 after homeowners complained about increased premiums in the wake of the storms. And similarly to what happened after Hurricane Andrew, several private insurers also left the state, putting more people onto Citizens insurance rolls. In the worst-case scenario, the insurer could face claims of hundreds of billions of dollars, but it only has the ability to pay about $20 billion. Now some state lawmakers are warning that Citizens and the state-run backup fund won't be able to pay if a big storm or series of storms hits. One of those sounding the alarm is Bill Hager, who represents Boca Raton in the Florida House.
We need to be brutally, intellectually honest with ourselves. Florida is the number one catastrophic landmass on the face of the earth.
Last legislative session, Hager co-sponsored a bill that would have tried to shrink the number of insurers, getting what's called reinsurance from the state's backup catastrophe fund, or CAT fund. It acts as a backup not only for Citizens, but also for some private insurers.
So we have the state of Florida owning and operating a reinsurance company when concurrently the state of Florida knows that when the big storm comes, we cannot pay the claims that we promised we would pay.
Hager's bill failed to pass, but some lawmakers, including Florida Governor Rick Scott, continue to rally around shrinking the scope of Citizens and the CAT fund. Citizens' Board of Directors say they need a 15.2% increase for existing and new homeowner policies, but they said they'll ask for just a 7.5% increase because of the 10% cap put in place by the legislature. Professor Maroney says it looks inevitable there will be some type of rate increase for Citizens' policyholders.
So really, quite frankly, I think the question is, whose lap is the ball going to be thrown into? Is it going to be Citizens that does it, or are they going to throw it back in the lap of the legislature? And
6 hurricane-free years have allowed the insurer to build up a cash surplus. But National Weather Service forecaster Nicole Carlisle says people shouldn't get complacent just because it's been calm lately.
It doesn't really matter too much the number or the chance, but just the fact that there could be one, you know, and just the message to get out is to stay prepared.
And when the big storm hits and Citizens runs out of money, then it has the ability to charge Florida policyholders post-loss assessments in addition to their premiums, unlike private insurers. And that includes all home and auto policy holders. They're still paying off assessments from the 2004 storm season. Once again, Patrick Maroney of the Florida Catastrophic Storm Risk Management Center.
I don't know if most Citizens policyholders understand that Citizens has three separate accounts, and when there are shortfalls, the first chargeback is against Citizens policyholders up to 15% per account. So you could get a 45% assessment right off the bat.
Barbara Z is the insurance liaison for Community Advocacy Network, which lobbies on behalf of residential property owners. She says she meets members all the time who don't understand what they're getting into when they buy a Citizens policy.
They had the agent say to them, "Oh, we cannot renew you, but unfortunately, we have to put you into Citizens." Well, that's so negative. And what Citizens? Well, they're the insurer of last resort.
Citizens Governing Board, led by new CEO Barry Gilway, will vote next week on what rate increase it will request from the Florida Office of Insurance Regulation. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
Thanks to Jessica Palumbo for helping to set up the discussion with my next guest, Florida Insurance Commissioner Kevin McCarty, the man in charge of regulation, compliance, and enforcement of statutes related to the business of insurance in Florida. Well, thank you and welcome to It's About Florida. Tell me about your job and how you got into this role as being the state's insurance commissioner.
Well, I began my career in public service about 1988, and I came out of law school and was looking for employment, and I saw this opportunity to work for the Workers' Comp Reform Task Force, which was set up in 1988, and Florida was in the throes of a very challenging time. With a workers' comp system that was in peril and really jeopardizing the financial viability of the state. And I thought this was being a great opportunity for me to put myself into public service, and it was a short-time gig. And lo and behold, 17-plus years later, I'm still here in Tallahassee. So I could have cut my teeth in workers' compensation reform and eventually worked my way over to the then Department of Insurance. Just several months before Hurricane Andrew made its fateful swath cut across South Florida, and was working at the time in residual markets, and residual markets then became a big deal with a property crisis in Florida. So that's sort of how it all began.
And insurance is a very big issue, and especially when we're dealing with a storm. We've just dealt with Tropical Storm Debbie. So what happens during that process, and how does your job come into play?
Well, obviously, insurance plays a very critical role in rebuilding homes, lives, and businesses after a hurricane. We've had, unfortunately, more than our fair share in the history of Florida. 2004, 2005, some $38 billion worth of damage was heaped upon our state. Every one of our 67 counties were declared a natural disaster. It's their insurance mechanism that provides the essentials for people to find shelter, rebuild homes, and get children back to school and parents back to work and the economy back going again. So insurance really is the cornerstone for recovery after a natural disaster.
Shortly after the 2004-05 season, we saw a lot of the largest insurers leave the state. What's the current status of where we are now with Citizens Property and dealing with, basically taking on all these customers when it really wasn't designed to be that way?
Right. Well, it really didn't begin in 2004 and 2005. Actually, when Hurricane Andrew made landfall, two or three insurers made up 50 or 60% of the total marketplace in Florida, which is pretty typical across the country. After Andrew, we had a fairly massive exodus out of the state inside of a nine-month period. About 63 companies made plans to exit the state, representing about 20% of the total market. Since that time, companies have had been managing their risk, and I think that was dramatically accelerated with 2004 and 2005. So the marquee names that most of us associate with homeowners insurance, like State Farm and Allstate and Travelers, really have become much, much smaller players. In 2006, the legislature enacted a bold concept, which was called the capital buildup program, which provided incentives for entrepreneurs to set up business in Florida. And essentially, we gravitated from a multi-state national program, which have, like you said, pretty much left a marketplace and left us with the only choice, which was the market of only resort when you have no competition in the market, and brought in $250 million to attract capital, which was hugely successful. Now 60% of our market is made up of these domestic companies, which taps most of their coverage from the reinsurance markets, primarily in Bermuda, to a lesser extent in the UK. Citizens has had sort of a rocky road. It was created originally, it was the JUA. In around 2000, it was merged with the Wind Pool Association, which had been around since 1972 to cover fairly remote parts of Florida, which provided wind-only coverage, started in the Keys. But after Andrew, it was vastly expanded, and then they merged these two together into Citizens in 2000. With a mind that that while there will always be a need for some residual market, particularly wind, we know that some areas are just impossible to find wind, but that we were to manage it in such a way that we would maximize the private sector that's out there. I think that had largely been achieved throughout the years by maintaining citizens' rates at what were called beyond your competitive rates. And the way that was achieved was to take the top 20 carriers that were writing business and peg citizens' rates so that they were at the top of the top 20 writers. So they weren't necessarily always the most expensive, but they were always in that top tier. Uh-huh. And so what happened is there was a great appetite for this new capital that was brought in under the capital buildup program to come in and write those policies. And we actually had companies queuing up and competing to take policies out of Citizens, and hundreds of thousands of policies came out of Citizens.
And what happened?
Well, after 2004 and 2005, there were very aggressive rate increases. And what happened is the global reinsurance market, they were in a state of panic. They could take an Andrew, they could take an Andrew plus an Andrew the next year, but they were battered about by storms all over Florida, all over the southeastern United States, coupled with natural disasters around the world. And so there was a great deal of concern whether this was going to be the new norm, and if this was going to be the new norm, the cost of capital went up precipitously, like over 100%. As those costs were passed on to policyholders, and it was election year, and most people, if you were taking polls, the number one issue was the war or the economy or education in Florida. It was property taxes and property insurance. And so actually, I had that backwards. It was property insurance and then property taxes. But it was an issue that had risen to the point where, in many cases, people were paying as much for their insurance as they were paying for their mortgage. So it jeopardized the economic viability of the state. So pretty aggressive steps were taken to expand the Florida Hurricane Catastrophe Fund. We hadn't mentioned much of this earlier, but the Florida Hurricane Cat Fund was set up to, after Andrew, to address the contraction of the reinsurance market.
Yeah.
And it was set to take a piece, but not all, but a significant piece. And that had been a very successful cornerstone of the recovery. 2007, the legislature dramatically expanded that. But they also put some restraints on citizens' rates, and which so made citizens' rates more competitive.
So are we pretty safe with Citizens if we experience like a big catastrophe?
Citizens does not buy reinsurance, so they are not in a position to protect their surplus through traditional reinsurance mechanisms, which most private companies are able to do. And they don't do that for a variety of reasons. First of all, they don't charge enough premium to be able to afford it. There is adverse selection, so companies are reluctant to sell them reinsurance. If they do, they sell it at a very high price. Citizens' funding mechanism for deficit is bonding. and going to the bond markets. But unfortunately, and they've done a number of pre-bondings, and they were in a very strong financial position. I don't want to scare people. Citizens can take a pretty big whack and still pay all their claims without going to the bond market. Really depends on where it hits, and they have, not to get complicated, but they have three different accounts. It depends on which account mm-hmm. gets hit. But they're in pretty strong situation. But the funding of Citizens has always been contingent upon collecting money from the CAT fund, which all the other companies draw on, but also an assessment. They assess their policyholders first, and then there's a general, what they call an emergency assessment, and where they assess all the policyholders in the state with the exception of just workers' comp. So if you can be own a car in Orlando but rent an apartment, and you'll be paying an assessment on both policies because you're paying off the debt of Citizens. So,
yeah.
But it was meant to be funded that way, and that's why I think a lot of the governor and a lot of people in the legislature are concerned. They want us to have a market of last resort. They also want that market to be sustainable.
Yeah, we hear all the time that Citizens' rates are artificially low, and there's been an effort underway to increase rates on the future policyholders. So how much is the average Florida citizen paying without Citizens property insurance?
What's the average premium?
Yeah.
The average premium is going to vary by extremes. The north. If you're in north central Florida,
I see,
you
yeah.
can pay. You might pay $1,200 on a $1,200 house. If you're in Miami, you could pay $7,000 for that same coverage. I mean, it really varies a great deal. The component that makes the difference is the wind risk and your ability when your house was built. If your house was built to the modern building code, you're going to have a better price if you have wind mitigation credits, et cetera. The further away you are from the water and the stronger your building, the lower your premiums are going to be.
What would you say is the biggest obstacle in getting companies to come back to Florida?
As the companies are want to come back for two reasons, I think. One is they want to there is a lot of capital out there. And one of the things I was talking to the cabinet this morning is in my professional career, I have never seen as much capital sitting on the sideline with an appetite to do business in Florida. They're there for two reasons. One is investment diversification. Fund managers right now, they were looking at Florida. Florida looks pretty attractive to balance their portfolio. Let's face it, investment in other instruments right now are not doing that great. So putting a high risk yield out for a Florida bond or a Florida instrument would be very appealing, particularly since it's diverse. But they only come in for a price. And while some companies have been able to attract that capital, if Citizens' rates are not in a position where companies can charge rates that are commensurate with that risk to bring that capital in, we're not going to be able to attract that capital. I have to admit I've been in conversations with a number of fund managers, and there are a number of companies that want to bring in new cap companies and even more that want to augment companies that are there, even with today's environment. But it would sure be able to accelerate that if we were able to get some more price stability equilibrium for Citizens' rates.
So essentially, Citizens needs to raise rates.
Citizens needs to, yes, equilibrium. Yeah, raise. I guess it sounds better. But the reason is, let's face it, we're in a struggling economic time. Property rates in South Florida in particular are already very sporty. I think people are you go to a town meeting in the West Dade or Central Broward and talk to folks about the pressing needs and the housing market's very tight. Mm-hmm. Credit lending is very, very limited, and having increases in homeowners insurances is adding to that burden. But the reality is for us to get out of this hole, we need to be able to bring in that capital that is not being utilized.
You're listening to It's About Florida. I'm Tramell Gomes, chatting with Florida Insurance Commissioner Kevin McCarty. Up next, we'll talk PIP. The other insurance issue that you deal with a lot, PIP, personal injury protection. So earlier in the year, we saw the passage of a bill that addressed auto insurance and the state's mandatory personal injury protection law. First, can you give us some background? Why did the state create PIP in the first place?
Well, you know, PIP was really considered one of the, a visionary program back in the 1970s. 1972, Florida was the second state in the nation to adopt what was considered a progressive, first of its kind in the nation. Because the concept was that if you were hurt in an accident, that you would get prompt quality medical treatment, regardless of who's at fault. And it really did seem like a good at the time, and it really kind of spread around the country. And at one point, I think the high water mark was like 28 or 30 states had a PIP law. Hmm. Eventually, however, the concept became a target for fraudsters and hucksters, which is not uncommon in our state or other states for that to be the case. And unfortunately, we've seen a real deterioration in Florida. In the around the year 2000, a grand jury study was released, did a scathing report on the current state of the PIP market, and pointed out various areas of fraud abuse in the system, everything from staged accidents to runners. People would come up and give business cards misleading the public, serious distortions in the system, which has really have led to a system that's barely been out of control. And the legislature had made several attempts since the grand jury report to take some corrective actions. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that it became such an embedded cottage industry. I mean, you don't have to go far in the state to see a billboard that advertised, you know, the jingle we all heard.
Or listen to the radio. Yes, it's in my head right now.
Right. It does. They are very good at the catchy jingles. But the problem and you know, you're driving down I-4, you know, the whole highway. If it's not sinkhole, it has to do with a car accident. Or if you're in pain, don't call an adjuster. Call this number. We will refer you. So you really had this automatic service where people would be people who would report accidents that were not on the accident report, that should even show that they were in the car. So you would have staged accidents where you would have six people in the car. They would go right from there to the PIP clinic, and then they would get, you know, and they would get paid money for being in the staged accident. We've had our CFO, Jeff Atwater, put together just an amazing team of people to go out in these sting operations. And you know, and so everyone has always been like, hey, let's put some more money into that. You know, fighting fraud is like motherhood and apple pie. Everybody's for it, right? We want to get the bad guys out of the system. And so I asked him, I said, well, so, you know, how about, you know, we get more fraud resources? He goes, you can give me Patton's army and I can't make a dent in the fraud that is so prevalent in our state. And one of the exercises I went through with Governor Scott is to show how this problem, which was primarily a South Florida problem, is now gravitated. And then Tampa then became the staged capital of Florida. Tampa area then took some very strong local measures and cracked down on some of the fraud clinics, which really gave us, you know, some insight as to what might be needed to be done to fix the problem. But, you know, PIP benefits increased from 2008 to 2010. They went from $1.45 billion to $2.45 billion, which is a 70% increase.
So can you explain the bill the legislature passed?
Well, there was quite a great deal of debate as to how to achieve the savings in the system. And I think one of the critical factors is how do you keep pay for those people who are injured legitimately in an accident and against those people who are using these PIP clinics. And let's face it, there are PIP clinics that have been set up, you know, MRIs in strip malls. You know, traditionally when a doctor would send you to get an MRI, you'd go to a hospital or you would go to a diagnostic clinic. You wouldn't think about going and get a Slurpee and an MRI. Mm-hmm. So many of these things have been set up in the response to the generous threshold of being able to access these benefits. So the initial thought was, well, let's limit this to emergency care. If you go back to the original premise of what was PIP was intended to do, was to provide coverage for those injured in an accident. And so what the legislature did was to try to strike some kind of balance, to provide a limited number of benefits for soft tissue injury and then the full amount of the benefits by addressing some of the most egregious. They took out things like massage therapy and acupuncture.
Yeah.
And some of the things that I think most people would be shocked that those were claiming so many dollars in the system.
So would it be better for Florida if the state just did away with PIP?
Well, that's certainly been an ongoing debate. It certainly would get rid of the PIP clinics. I mean, if public leader once suggested the idea, well, let's sunset PIP for 2.5 years, because 2.5 years, all the claims that are in the cycle would have gone and the fraudsters and hucksters would have had to gravitate to something else, which inevitably I'm sure they would, but it would be out of the PIP system. And if we wanted to come bring back a limited benefit medical system, that's something we might do.
Has it been tried elsewhere, and has it been successful?
Has it been done elsewhere? Yes. Many, many states have abandoned the PIP system. Florida is one of the 10 states left. And if you look at the PIP, the systems that have PIP left, they're all in trouble. And our benefit is only $10,000. Some of these other states have 50 to 250 to unlimited PIP benefits. So I can only imagine how dramatically worse the problem would be in Florida if we had like a $50,000 benefit. But yeah, a number of states have gone to a tort system where you just go back to who's at fault. And you would be responsible for having your own coverage. Most systems, with the exception of Florida and New Hampshire, have what's called mandatory BI, which requires you to cover me. You hit my car, you hurt me, you are liable. Florida does not have that. New Hampshire doesn't have that. One thing we could do is just get rid of the PIP system and let everybody be on their own and cover themselves. My sense is I think we've made one very, I think, very bold Herculean attempt. There are some glitches in this bill. We've already seen some of the overly aggressive medical services providers in West Florida advertising that they'll certify that you had a medical emergency. I mean, they didn't say we're going to evaluate whether or not it occurred, but we will certify that it did. Makes you a little suspect whether or not that certification is valid and based upon facts or not. But so we do have some concerns on the implementation. There have been some glitches in some of the days, the effective dates. But we're going to work with the industry and work with the medical community to ensure that we can make a smooth transition. Mm-hmm. Along with the Agency for Healthcare. And hopefully it will have its intended consequences.
Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join me here on It's About Florida. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. It's really been a pleasure.
Special thanks to Florida Insurance Commissioner Kevin McCarty and our reporter Jessica Palumbo. You've been listening to It's About Florida, a production of WFSU-FM. Our producer is Lynn Hatter, with technical assistance provided by Taylor Cox. Please join us again next week for more discussions about the issues impacting our state. I'm Tramell Gomes.